Hello, dear listeners. This is Basement Gaming, episode 72. My name is Herb, and I'm joined by my dear cousin Brigham.
Hello.
So this episode, Brigham and I go another side quest as we talk about the From Software game Elden Ring. And we have our own expert here, Dylan.
Hi.
If you enjoy the show, please follow us on Twitter at BasementGaming9 and on your favorite podcast listening app. With formalities out of the way, welcome to Basement Gaming. And we're here. It's happening, Brigham. We're doing it. Even though you don't want to, we're talking about Elden Ring.
You're bringing me kicking and screaming, but we're doing it.
All right, Dylan. This is it. After years of you trying to convince me to play a Farm Software game, I've actually played, let me see, how many hours? I've played 28.8 hours of Elden Ring. And yeah, you're the expert here. Let's just give you give her quick background of your experience with From Software games. From what I remember, you played them all, yeah?
I've played at least all the ones that are like Souls-like. I haven't played, they made like the Armored Core games back in like PlayStation 2 era and like some other like no-name games back then. But, you know, the first one that they made that kind of started their, rise to fame, if you will, was Demon's Souls, which I did not play when it actually first released because it was a PlayStation 3 exclusive and I did not own a PlayStation 3. And so my first experience was I played Dark Souls Prepare to Die Edition on the PC in like 2013. And it was just recently when I bought a PS4, God, I don't even know how many years ago, 3, 4, 5 years ago, that I finally played Demon's Souls and Bloodborne and all that. So I played everything after Demon's Souls came out, basically.
What's that first one you said? Dark Souls, what now?
So the PC edition of Dark Souls is called Dark Souls Prepare to Die Edition.
Okay.
Basically, what they did is they only released the Dark... So, to start, From Software is notorious for developing their games specifically for consoles and then doing PC ports. So, like, Dark Souls 1 was not available on PC until they released quote-unquote Prepare to Die Edition, and it had all the DLCs attached to it. It's like Game of the Year Edition, right?
Yeah.
Except it was the worst PC port I've ever seen in my life. So that's something I'll probably talk about with you later when we're talking about Elden Ring, but From Software is notoriously hit or miss when it comes to their PC ports.
Interesting. Did you play the remaster? Oh, I guess that's PS5 only, so unless you have one of those.
I will not be buying a PS5. So unfortunately, I've only been able to see Demon's Souls remastered through streams. However, it does look like probably one of the best remasters. We're not talking about a GTA remaster over here. This is actually like a true remaster, and it looks incredible and it sounds incredible. Like they basically built it from the ground up.
Yeah, and as you said, it is on console, which is probably why it looks so good. It's so strange that it feels like, I don't know if it's because I know you guys, but it feels like Dark Souls is a PC game, but I guess it's not. I wonder what the numbers are like on that.
I don't know, but the Dark Souls PC port was really their first PC game that they released. If you saw the key mapping for Dark Souls Prepare to Die, you would know that they literally had no idea what they were doing when it came to the PC. it was mandatory to have a controller. Like, you can get away with using a mouse and keyboard on their more recent games, but that PC port for Dark Souls is like unforgivably bad.
Yeah. All right, Brian. What's your short experience with From Software games? Have you played any? Have you actually started a game and played any?
I remember back when I used to work at GameStop, I had a friend from college come over, and I was like, hey, you know what we can do? We can just go to GameStop, and as a GameStop employee, if you don't know this, you can just take any used game and bring it home and play it for free. It's like a base, like borrowing the game. So your entire store, at least the used game section, is like your own little Blockbuster. It's pretty nice. And so I was like, hey, let's get a copy of what's that game called? Bloodborne. And we'll try it out. I played it for like 5 minutes. I got to the first boss and I tried like a couple times and he was like, yeah, that first boss is like one of the hardest bosses. And I was like, yep, I'm out. And that was my experience playing any From Software game.
That sounds about right for me.
That sounds about right. Yeah. I think I've never played the other ones. This was the only one I played, but I've pretty much watched people play Dark Souls 1, 2, and 3. I watched my brother play Bloodborne for quite a few hours. I think I was like home for spring break or something, and my brother was playing Bloodborne, and I just watched him play pretty much the whole week. So I've been a backseat gamer when it comes to From Software games forever. It just, I mean, I've talked about it extensively on this podcast. It just never really called to me to want to play it. But since this game had so much hype behind it, it just felt like I kind of had to. So I did it. I played it. We're not going to really talk about my thoughts too much. We'll get to that later. But yeah, Elden Ring, I mean, I would say it's been pretty well received, generally. I haven't really seen anyone besides the usual crowd really talking down to it. Like, what do you think, Brigham? But Brigham and Dylan, what are your overall thoughts on Elden Ring?
Yeah, I'll go first real quick just because I feel like I have less to talk about on this topic. But from an outsider looking in, it seems like the hype has been insane. Like from beforehand, before the game came out, there was so much hype for this game. And I was like, I understand people like these From Software games, but it seems abnormally large hype, amount of hype for this game. And it came out and it seems like everyone like it. Not only the game not only met people's expectations, but it somehow exceeded them. Because this is like over a month out from the game coming out, I think, and people are still talking about it. Like it came out yesterday. People seem to love the game a lot. And it makes someone like me, who's not even into From Software games or Souls games, whatever you want to say, super interested in at least learning more about it and reading more about it. I'm still not to the point where I want to play one. If it ever came to like Game Pass or something, or if it like was on, yeah, if it ever came to Game Pass, it's pretty much the only way I'll ever actually try it. But I'm definitely interested in, like, I watch videos of people playing it. I watch reviews. And I'm really happy people are seemingly in love with it.
All right. So, Elden Ring. So, the reason this game is as hyped up as it has been is I want to say it's been in development for, like, 7 years. So, From Software has basically done the Demon's Souls remaster and Sekiro as projects at the same time that they've been developing Elden Ring, to give a sense of like the time frame that this has been going on for. And so I think that the reason that everybody's really hyped for Elden Ring is that, first of all, it's almost like a fresh restart, in that it's, you know, a brand new story, brand new lore, brand new setting. You know that all the mechanics are going to be, you know, very similar to the Dark Souls game. It's not going to be like Sekiro or Bloodborne, where they're pretty substantially different play styles. And I don't think that From Software has really they haven't had like a cyberpunk moment where they just completely flop and drop the ball. So I want to, is it last 2 years that it won like most anticipated game at the Game Awards or whatever? I want to say
that sounds right.
Yeah. And it was rightly done, because it's kind of the culmination of all of their work up to this point in time, and they did it really well. So I think that you're probably going to see it maintain popularity for quite a while here, given that it's lived up to expectations.
Yeah. Okay. So, I mean, that's a good way to look at it. I think since people have been waiting for it for so long, it kind of makes sense that everyone's like, oh my gosh, it's finally here. We'll talk about it for the next year and a half. I think we'll see how it goes after the Game Awards, if people still talk about it. And another thing too, it's still getting patched and updated all the time. So I feel like every time it gets patched, there's like a lot of bugs and a lot of like tricks and stuff that people are using to speedrun it and no hit run it, they kind of go away, and then those players would just go into game again and then find new hacks to try to speedrun it even faster. I think the current world record for a speedrun is at 17 minutes or something ridiculous. I don't know. It's kind of crazy. I don't know how people play the game like that, but that's up to them, I guess. I mean, I guess you kind of brought it up a little bit, Dylan, that Elden Ring is kind of different from, I guess, Bloodborne, you said, and Demon's Souls, yeah? Would you say?
Well, if we were to break down the From Software games...
Or Sekiro, I mean, you said. Yeah,
Sekiro. Yeah, Sekiro. So you basically have, like, Demon's Souls and then, you know, Dark Souls 1, 2, and 3. Well, you know, 2 is kind of a little bit different, but not really. All have basically the same, like, core gameplay and design, which are all very close to Elden Ring. So like that's kind of their bread and butter, if you will.
Yeah.
Then you've got Bloodborne, which is similar to the Dark Souls type of gameplay in that it's faster paced. You know, you had like the recovery system where, you know, if you get hit and you attack the enemy afterwards, you can heal some of the damage they dealt to you back. They try to make it a little more active like that, I guess, would be the best description. And then Sekiro is not anything like them at all. It's a completely different game, and it does not play remotely the same. And I think that's why it's personally my least favorite of their games. But Elden Ring is in that camp with Dark Souls in terms of how it plays. So I think that's the reason that it's been really hyped up. And besides the fact that, you know, George R.R.M. was writing it and he, you know, was at the peak of all the hype for Game of Thrones before that kind of fell apart.
Yeah.
So I think that got people really hyped as well. But I think the game just shows what they learned across all of their other experiences and just kind of refined it to where it's, I would say that, like, from a Souls game standpoint, Elden Ring kind of boils it all down into kind of its most pure form.
Yeah. Okay. So I'll go over like what I notice are some of the obvious, there's some obvious differences between this game and the Souls games that I've seen, but as someone that's played them, you'll probably notice a little bit more. I mean, obviously the biggest thing is the open world, right? Being able to just explore and then just level up and do whatever you want on the map is, from what I noticed, substantially different from the previous Souls games, especially when it comes to boss encounters. There are so many points where, like, you get to a boss, especially like a story boss, and you're just like, I mean, this happened to me. I got to the first two story bosses. I was like, I can't beat these guys. And you're allowed to just, like, turn around and go do something else, where I feel like that wasn't really the case in the other games. Would you say, I think the question here is, like, would you say the biggest differences in this game, does it make the series better? Or are there differences in this game that you think makes it worse than Dark Souls 1, 2, or 3?
So, I think there's a two-sided coin to the open world side of it. So I think that it's one of the best implementations of an open world without having to rely on quests and storytelling from that perspective. Because, like, you know, you've got 20 hours in the game, and you probably have like 1 minute of that spent actually talking to NPCs, right?
Yeah,
very you compare good. That to like The Witcher or any of the Elder Scrolls games or the Fallout games. You know, a lot of your time is spent doing a quest of some sort. You're just, and this is something that's every single game, minus Sekiro to an extent. They just toss you into this world until they tell you go ahead and have at it. You know, there's normally an NPC, which there is in this game, that'll be like, all right, go here if you want to, you know, survive for more than 2 minutes. And that's kind of it. You know, it's a little more handholdy with the whole graces pointing you, you know, the direction of where you need to go. I think that's a necessary addition to Elden Ring. It wasn't really needed in like Dark Souls 2, Dark Souls 3, or Bloodborne, because there wasn't really a way to get lost in those games and wander into the wrong area. Dark Souls 1 was notorious for people basically, instead of going up the stairs, They went down the stairs and they ended up in a place they didn't need to be, and they get one shot up by skeletons at level one. And that would make people just rage quit the game because they thought they needed to go down and fight the skeletons, but that's a much later game area. And it's right next to where you start the game, basically.
That sounds so troll. That's exactly...
It's part of what made Dark Souls 1 really great, which I'll probably talk about later, but they added a lot of kind of hand-holdy things like the grace pointing you in the right direction. You can just, you get stonewalled by a boss, you can turn around, go explore and wander around and kill stuff and find something else to do and level up and get your weapon upgraded or find a weapon that you like better, you know, whatever it is. To your point, Herb, you know, if you were playing Dark Souls, we'll say Dark Souls 2 especially, if you get stuck on a boss that's down that specific kind of linear side of the game, you have no choice but to either go and farm enemies over and over again until you got over leveled to beat it, or just smash your head against the wall against that boss repeatedly. And I think that is definitely something that is a lot better about Elden Ring and makes it more accessible to people. The other thing, which you would not really know about since you didn't play any other Souls games outside of like watching streams, is the Stakes of America, which...
I've heard about this. Yeah.
You don't have to go and run through the entire level from the last bonfire that you rested at to get to the boss again. Because even as somebody who's played Dark Souls for hours upon hours and hours, eventually when you die to a boss, it just gets tedious when you just have to run past every single enemy to get back to the boss again and then die to the boss. So that's a huge benefit in this game, especially given that it's so massive in scale. I think people would really easily get fed up with, you know, I died and now I have to spawn at the start of the catacombs and run all the way to the boss again, you know?
Yeah, I mean, except I don't know if it's like this for all the other bosses, but I mean, Renala was weird where I had to walk a lot more for her than the other two bosses that I fought, which is weird. But I did hear someone say that she's the only one that's kind
of
like that.
There's some of them where I think it's justified to an extent because, like, I don't know if they added the stakes in later in the development phase or if it was an idea that was there from the start, because again it was over 7 years, you know. But typically in a Dark Souls or Bloodborne or Sekiro game, you're rewarded for exploring by finding shortcuts. So like Renala is a good example.
Yeah,
I kind of had to tell you to get to it, but if you ran over to that door and opened it up, it shortened that, you know, you didn't have to go to that ramp of death with a giant lead ball that crushes you. So <Yeah. laughs> the other games would do that where, you know, you could find ways to shorten the run back to the boss. And I think maybe what's going on there is that's probably a relic of that design before they introduced the stakes. And it was such a short run. I mean, there's like two enemies, you know, between that and the boss room. It's tedious to run back there, but you're not running through like a whole level of enemies, you know?
Yeah. Brigham, you're being kind of quiet, man. Do you have any questions you want to bring up here? I mean, I think that's a pretty good talk about like what's different. I don't know if you have any pressing thing.
Have a question, but it's going to kind of veer off to a little bit of a different kind of topic. So I didn't know if you wanted to ask more about this specifically before I move on.
Well, I guess the only thing is there anything that's different in this game that you think makes it significantly worse than the other ones?
I wouldn't say there's anything that necessarily makes it significantly worse. I think that they might have accidentally opened up a can of worms with how they changed your ability to... So the Ashes of War, where you can change your weapon art.
Yeah.
In all of the previous games, the weapon art was determined by the weapon itself. So if you were using a greatsword, for example, all of the greatswords, unless it was unique, would have the same weapon art, right? Now, since you can basically go in and make your weapon have whatever weapon art that you want, I think what they're going to run into, and I think it's a good thing they're patching it as often as they have been, because like Dark Souls 3 did not get a balance patch for like a year after its release. So there was stuff that was busted for a long time. I think they're going to have a really difficult time getting super broken stuff taken care of without necessarily like completely gutting, you know, a certain weapon or a certain weapon. So that's definitely one of the two-sided coin things in that I think the Ashes of War system is awesome because it lets you really customize more than you have in any other game. But on the other hand, people are going to find stuff that's way super broken and you're going to get invaded or try to duel somebody and it's just going to be like
just stupidly one-shot. Yeah. Mm. Okay. All right, Brian, what'd you got?
Yeah, so one thing I thought was really interesting was seeing a lot of the other video game developers' reactions to Elden Ring. I don't know if you heard about this, but there have been a lot of like memes that came up because a lot of Ubisoft devs were kind of criticizing how bad the UI is for Elden Ring. And people will be like, oh, like, look at Ubisoft trying to make fun of another game when they should be working on just trying to make a good game themselves, you know? And then there are people from Blizzard, too, that are just like, this game seems like Dark Souls games seem like they actively just tried to not be fun. So I don't know. It's just kind of interesting because I feel like there are a lot of developers who are in this position where like they don't really understand why it is that people seem to like these Dark Souls games like Elden Ring so much. And I just want to know from your opinion, what do you think it is about? Do you think that there is a problem? Like, I guess maybe I should say it like this. Do you think that these Souls games are good despite their flaws, whether it be like a bad UI or overly punishing gameplay or not very good at like I've heard like a lot of developers complain that the combat doesn't really what's the word, like tell you exactly like when to block or when to dodge things, as well as other games may do that. So like does the game work despite all those things, or are those little quote unquote problems the reason why you think the games are so successful?
I would say it's the second of those things. So like I mean, here's a perfect example. When's the last time that you struggled playing a game developed by Ubisoft in any capacity?
Yeah, very not never, not a while.
Never, right? And then, you know, I think that's the case for a lot of games nowadays. And again, they could be story-based games where the combat is really there to give you something to engage you while they tell the story. You know, Horizon Zero Dawn's a good example of this. They put, you know, giant mecha dinosaurs in front of you to kill, but they're trying to tell a story and have a plot along the way, right? With Dark Souls games, the plot is secondary to the gameplay itself, if that makes sense. You know, they tell the story through item descriptions and descriptions of boss holes and how stuff is placed in the environment, for example. You have to actually kind of dig in and pay attention to figure out, you know, what's going on in the world around you and the background of the world and everything like that. It's not explicitly told to you. So I think it does give them a little more measure to be able to go in and, you know, have difficult and punishing combat. I hate it when people say that it's punishing because it's not like it's unfair. Like I've outside of one specific example in Elden Ring right now, I don't think any of the bosses in this game are unfair in any way, shape, or form. I think that's actually probably one of the most balanced games when it comes to the difficulty of the bosses and the
enemies. I'm actually going to second that. I think, Brim, we kind of talked about this a little bit. The thing with this, you shouldn't really go into like Elden Ring or a Souls game to be like, I want like a story told to me and I'm just gonna along for the ride and then beat some bosses along the way. I think people that like this game, they like it because like Dylan is saying, it's a challenge, you know? Like, I think the thing about it being punishing is like you go into a boss fight and you get punished by not knowing what to do, essentially. And then you keep dying until you learn what to do, and then you beat the boss fairly easily after that. Especially if you're, you know, properly geared. So I think that's what makes the game good. That's, although I have a lot of problems with this game, the boss fights, that definitely is not one of them. That's definitely like, although it's been the most frustrating parts of the game for me, is probably dying to bosses a lot, but it's also like it does feel very rewarding when you're like, I finally figured out how to beat this boss. Even though I beat Renala with like one health and zero health pots, I just barely got a lightning bolt off on her. It was just like, I got it. Now we move on kind of thing. So I will agree that like the actual gameplay is problematic, but the actual boss fight mechanics, especially the main bosses that I've fought so far and from the ones that I've seen through streams, I think those are all really good. My problems with the game come in other places that we will go into mm-hmm. later. But I mean, we kind of stumbled upon the other topic I had in mind, which was the story. Yeah, like you said, Dylan, like this game, it does not spoon feed you the story in any way. So much so that like you'll go on quest lines. Like you guys kept telling me about these quest lines when I was playing, and I'm like, there's quest lines in this game? It's because you don't really know because they don't really tell you you're on a quest line until you're really like doing it. And then you're like, oh, I talked to you earlier about this thing and you're here now. I guess this is a quest line. And then you keep doing that until you do it, which is kind of annoying a little bit. Like, I kind of wish there was some sort of log, not even like a World of Warcraft kind of log, just like a journal to tell me like, hey, I spoke to Blade and then this is what he said to me. Right, just a little something to just keep track of what's happening, because why write a story if you're gonna make it so difficult for people to even follow along? So it's like, I'm not asking you to like make me talk to NPCs all day, but at least like give me something to know what's happening, especially because I've heard some of these quest lines can be locked out of, like you can actually progress past them and miss out on it. It's like, you don't want to miss out on cool stories. Why would they do this? I don't know. Like, what do you think? What do you think of like the overall story representation, not just in Souls games in general, but like specifically in Elden Ring, like how they presented the story here, Dylan?
So there's two different things at play here, which is the NPC interactions and then the actual like overarching kind of story of the world. So I do think that. I don't think that you really necessarily need a quest log, because they did go on and add like the little portrait things now to where you can actually see where like certain NPCs are at, which is welcome, because in previous Souls games, it's exactly the same in that, you know, if you don't remember what somebody said, or if they offhandedly mention I'm going somewhere or doing something like this, you can completely forget and miss them and miss their storyline, if you will. I wouldn't call them quests though. Like,
yeah, it was just lack none of a better of the, word, really.
None of the NPCs in any of the games have any actual importance. Like, you can not talk to or interact with this. Like, on my first playthrough of Dark Souls 1, I did not do a single NPC like storyline at all. I completely missed all of it and still got through the game perfectly fine. The way that they design their NPC like interaction lines, if you will, is that, you know, you're thrown into this world where everything's gone to shit, basically, and like everything's trying to kill you, and or people are losing their minds, or, you know, it's just a very bleak environment, and these are other people that just happen to be there with you. You know, they're not really like obligated to stick together with you, and you're not really obligated to help them in any way. They're just kind of trying to do their thing in the world, and if you happen to experience the whole thing and intervene in their storylines, like if you kill a certain boss before you're actually supposed to in like Dark Souls 1, or a certain enemy, you can potentially save one of the NPCs because they'd go and die to said character or something like that. But it's meant to be these things where you might not discover it on your first playthrough. It's not like Skyrim where you can just go and be the master of every single covenant in the game from your first character necessarily. Like, it's I don't think it necessarily translated too well to Elden Ring because of the fact that the world is so much bigger, and so you're less likely to just randomly come across the guy and be like, oh hey, it's that guy again. You know, you could completely miss them for the entire rest of the game. So I would say that point is a little weaker given the format, but I don't get the arguments for like I need a, you know, a quest log or you know, marker telling me to go here or anything, because it at the end of the day, like, it doesn't really matter if you actually complete their storyline or not.
Yeah. It's just the thing that we're used to, right, Brigham? It's like the cycle. Like, I'm playing Horizon right now, and I'm purposely not ending the game because I want to do all the side quests and errands first. And it's really easy to do that when you know what they are, right? You can just hop on your mount and go get it and go do that quest. I don't know if I'd go as far as I need a marker, especially for a game like Elden Ring. I just need something to remind me of what that person said, you know? And I guess you'll have to show me about the portraits thing, because if it wasn't for our friend Spino telling me about the blade guy and how, where I have to go to the freaking the underground place. I don't even remember what it's called. That's another thing. The freaking names are ridiculous in this game. Anyway, he had to essentially direct me to a place where I needed to go to continue this quest line. And he said literally the only reason why he knew about it is because he looked it up. So it just feels like too many steps of separation between me finding out who this character is and what he wants me to do next. Not want me to do this, but what he's doing next and like how I can interact with him. So I guess it's just something that I'm used to. But again, a lot about this game is if you're used to Souls games or From Software games, you're just kind of along for the ride. You kind of know what's going to happen or how it works. So I don't know.
You actually just gave one of the best examples of why. So that is probably the easiest one in the game to follow. So like the best comparison I can get is like back in the very early days before. So actually not even that far, long ago. So Morrowind, right? So Elder Scrolls Morrowind, there was no map markers for quests, right? So you had to actually remember what somebody told you. Like if they told you, hey, you need to turn left at this rock along this road that goes out of town. And then, you know, go to the second cave that you encounter in order to find this item. You had to actually go and follow those steps to do it, right? In Oblivion and such, they added the actual quest marker so that you could just go straight there. And you know, some people like that, some people don't because of the immersion factor. So that quest line that you just talked about, spoilers, not really, because it's, again, that none of it matters at the end of the day. The first time that you go into the forest in Limgrave, you know, the first noob-friendly area you start in at the start of the game, right? You'll hear a howling in the forest, right? You're like, yo, what's going on with that? I hear howling. I don't see, you know, what is that?
Yeah, well, which I completely missed, town. By the way. I completely missed it, by the way.
So you're probably running away from a bear trying to kill you. Yeah. So you hear that, and he's perched on top of the tower. So unless you're looking specifically at the tower, you wouldn't necessarily have seen him, right? Well, if you go back and you talk to Santa Claus, who is Calais, who is that first merchant you talk to, or at least is supposed to be the first one you talk to because he's like 50 feet in front of where you start the game. There's a dialogue that opens up for him, and it says about the howling. And he says, oh, hey, yeah, so that howling is like this, you know, half-wolf, half-man dude. And you know what? I think you two would get along because you really like killing stuff. And, you know, he also likes really killing stuff. And so you guys can go kill stuff. And then he says, what you need to do is, you know, when you hear that howling, just go to the source of it and use this emote I'm about to give you and snap your fingers. So what you're supposed to do is you remember, you know, about where in the forest that you heard the howling, or you can just, you know, run around the forest until you hear it, go over to said place, which is the tower, snap your fingers, and then he jumps down and he says, hey, I'm Blythe. I'm looking for this dude who I need to kill. So like, if you can let me know, you know, where this dude is, then, you know, we can kill him together. Well, that dude is in one of the Ever Jails, and it's the Bloodhound Knight guy, Darrowill. If you snap your fingers when you're in that Ever Jail, it will spawn Blythe in and you'll bash the guy's head in together. Yeah. But as you know, that's not where his storyline ends. So when you eventually get to the manor and you meet Ranny, she gives you the mission if you decide to help her, where it's like, okay, now you need to, you know, find the source of this knife that I need, right?
Yeah.
Well, lo and behold, turns out that Blythe works for her. And so he says, you know, hey, I'm going to go and inspect underground because, you know, that's where this hidden city is supposed to be. So, you know, I'll see you there. And so you may go through the game and not actually, you know, if you for some reason didn't want to look for it, never find it. But there is another NPC in the game that'll tell you that that well is there and you can go down it. And it's basically like a whole entire different zone. So that's what I'm talking about, where it's like you need to be attentive because the game absolutely tells you where you need to go for these people's quest lines. But I think most people have gotten so used to just spamming A through dialogue because we're questing like we're in WoW that they miss all of it. And then they complain Well, I mean, you know, how am I supposed to know that without a quest log? Well, you just got to pay attention to what's going on. That's why it's a well-crafted game. They don't, you don't have to have your hand held in order to complete stuff. And it's the same thing.
It's a matter of remembering, though. It's a matter of remembering, though. Like, I haven't really gotten to an example like this, but sometimes they'll tell you a description of where you need to go, right? But then you'll go off, and then you'll go do something else for 5 to 10 hours. You'll go bash your head in against one of the bosses for whatever reason because you're playing the game. And then you'll just forget. You stop playing for a day or two. You come back like, oh, where was that thing again? Like, how could you remember, you know? That's the part that I'm saying.
So, I mean, that's fair enough. And I think that's why they added the portraits next to the graces to show where, like, certain merchants or people are.
Yeah.
Because it definitely, again, just because it's open world, it's a lot harder to keep track of where a specific person is. But yeah, it's, I feel like if you had any developer handed, you know, guide to what to do next, I feel like it would cheapen the whole thing, because they're supposed to be more like Easter eggs in a sense of, you know, I managed to follow this living jar all the way through to the end of the game, and this is the end of his quest line. I didn't expect that.
Yeah.
You know, you could completely miss that quest line and have that not happen, and have somebody tell you or read online, like, hey, did you do Alexander's quest line? And you're like, wait, that guy's got a quest line?
Yeah.
So yeah. I don't buy into that whole argument as far as, I don't know what they're talking about either with, like, the interface or, like, the UI being bad. I don't really get that either, to be honest. I mean, it's an inventory and a map. I mean, what else do they want? And all right, one last point that Brigham brought up is, you know, people are complaining that maybe the bosses don't show you, or the developers don't tell you when to block or when.
Yeah,
to
I think it was like they're talking that they're not well telegraphed enough or something like that.
So that is utter bullshit, and I think that is because they have been completely used to. I would use an example of a game that I love and I think is a 10 out of 10 game. However, I think the combat is a little too spoon-fed to you, which is the most recent God of War game. And the unfortunate part of it is it could be a really good Dark Souls-like game without, you know, so much of the you know, bosses being punishing, because there's only like 4 in that game, I feel like. Because again, the main goal of that game is to tell you a story. That's a really good story. And it has a really good combat along the way, but if you have to dodge something, an enemy does like a red flash. Like if I wanted to play stop and go from Squid Game, I would play stop and go from Squid Game. I don't want the developers to tell me, hey, this enemy's about to attack you with something that you can't block, or you know, this enemy's flashing yellow because he's about to shoot a projectile at you. I should be able to know from what that enemy is telegraphing in their movements what they're going to do. And that's what Dark Souls does. You're never going to go into a boss and have them completely just do like an animation that has nothing to do with what they're about to hit you with, or really any enemy. There's nothing like that where they just randomly hit you with something. It's obvious through the movements of their arms or their mouth or their legs or just their general body language in some way, or even the sounds that they make, what they're going to do.
Yeah, Brim, I agree with him there. I think the enemies are very well telegraphed. I think the thing that's hard to get used to is your own character's movement. I think that for me, that was the biggest thing. I mean, this goes into, we can go into now the quote unquote criticisms of the game. Brigham, I don't know if you have one. I have a couple in mind from my own criticisms, I guess.
Yeah, you can go ahead. I don't really have much criticism since I haven't played the game, but the main thing was what I've heard, which Dylan's pretty much answered for me. So
yeah, that's what I was saying. If you saw anything online that you think people were kind of bringing up, I did.
I do have one thing actually.
Yeah,
I'll wait until you're done though.
No, go ahead with yours.
Yeah, so the one thing I thought was really interesting was that so many people were so against having, you know, multiple difficulties in the game, right? They didn't want to have like an easy difficulty or something like that. They just want to have the game be the game, because that's what makes it special, right? The difficulty of it. But what I found interesting, though, is that in this game, there kind of is a difficulty mode with how depending on the builds you have and like the spirits apparently in the game are so useful that like people say that if you play with spirits, if you try to beat bosses with the spirits, and I may be phrasing it wrong, but from what I've heard, it's like this, using spirits makes it a lot easier.
Oh, yeah.
It's like people don't even act like you're playing the actual game. You know what I mean? And I guess, what are your thoughts on that, Dylan? Like, do you think it's okay for the game to have such like a wide variation of difficulty based on your build and what kind of abilities you use? Or is this a good step? Is this a step in the right direction for the franchise?
So I think you described what makes Dark Souls games very fun from a replay value perspective, because. So let me address the whole, the summons and the ashes first. So ever since you could summon people in to help you, so in any multi, like online connected game released by FromSoft, so just not Sekiro, basically, you can summon somebody in to help you with the level or the boss, etc. Now, because the Dark Souls community is very much so centered on, you know, it's kind of like golf. You're not playing against anybody else necessarily, but you're playing against the course.
Gotcha.
And you're playing against yourself. So people will do really difficult, like, you know, fisticuffs only builds or level one through the entire game builds to challenge themselves and get through it once they've gotten, you know, good enough that they can get through it, you know, reliably. A perfect example is, so I've played through the game twice now with two entirely different characters. I'm about halfway through my third character playing through. So the first time I played through it, just because it was a new system, I used the Ashes summons, and they definitely help because it's like you summon in somebody from online without necessarily doing that, because summoning somebody from online normally will make the boss a complete joke, and there's almost no way that you lose to it unless you massively screw up. The Ashes basically summon, you know, NPCs in to help you out, which I think is a good addition, because if you play like a mage character, for example, especially in this game, some of the spells have such high requirements for your intelligence stat to even be able to use them that you have like no health whatsoever. So it does let you kind of role play and be like a summoner, like mage type person a little better than previous games. But I don't think that it's necessarily drastically different difficulty, other than stuff being like unbalanced, like certain weapons just being super OP, or like certain weapon arts like the Frost Stomp, which is the first thing to get nerfed in the game.
Yeah, that was crazy.
Like certain things, and it happens in every game, are a little too strong and make the game a little bit too easy. But like a person that plays a mage-based character is going to have a really easy time with some bosses and get absolutely shat on by other ones. And mm-hmm. a person that's makes a, you know, heavy weapon melee based character is going to do great against some bosses and get absolutely shat on by others. And same thing with basic enemies. I do think that generally speaking in this game, like playing a more range based class, like, or not really class, but like character, like a mage or somebody who uses pyromancies and miracles and such, does help a lot because it gives you more approaches to different situations. But I can tell you that the bosses that I had a difficult time on across the two playthroughs that I've done are massively different from each other because of the play styles of the characters. I don't think that it's necessarily like that things are easy because you did X, because you're going to run into spots where they're pain points pretty much no matter what.
That makes sense.
Yeah, I'll tell you right now, Brigham, I use the summons like no one's business. If something starts popping off, I'm releasing the hounds. I'm summoning my dogs. I have what we call, we got jellyfish bro on deck. I don't care what's happening. I am using everything in my repertoire to kill whatever I need to kill. I'm not saving anything for late game. Yeah, this game is hard. And if they're giving me things to use to make it a little bit easier, I'm going to use it. There's definitely, like Dylan said, there are definitely some purists out there that think you need to just have a giant freaking sword or a big hammer and just start whacking stuff. Use zero magic. I remember I was playing and our friend Chris was watching me and he saw me jump. And he's like, you can jump in this game? I was like, yes. What do you mean? That is a normal thing to do in video games. And I guess you couldn't do that in previous games. That's just ridiculous to me. But that is something that I won't understand about a criticism of it, is that it's too easy. I think, like Dylan said, it's quite difficult still. There are things that I think all these other things just give you a different way to play the game, and that's fine. Like I was saying earlier, one of the criticisms that I have with the game, I'm totally fine with bosses being hard. That makes sense to me. That's fine. But there are so many moments in the game where I feel like there's just like quality of life things that are just frustrating. Like the UI, we brought this up. I don't know how you can make it better, but it just doesn't feel good. I don't know how to say, like the quick action thing helps, but the little, you have to like scroll through all your stuff in the bottom left corner to get to you, whatever weapon you're trying to use. And of course it's slow. That's what I was saying about, like, it's not really, the game is not really about, not only about getting used to what everyone else is doing, but for me in particular, I haven't played any of the other Souls game. Getting used to how my character moves was just insanely difficult for me. Like this, your character is just slow at everything it does. Like everything, moving, sheathing a weapon, changing weapons, mounting a horse, dodging, the most important thing in the game, dodging. Everything just felt heavy and slow, even though I'm not a heavy load. Like, that was the first thing we looked at is like, are you using a heavy load? I was like, no, it's just a regular medium load. Everything is just vastly different from literally everything I've ever experienced. Like, the UI, again, I don't know. It's really hard for me to explain how different it is. If anyone that's played other games that are kind of similar, like open world games where you have items and an inventory and all this stuff, you can't say that you don't see the difference, how much more cumbersome it is to get through your items and get through your spells. It just doesn't feel intuitive. I don't know if I'm making any sense here, Dylan.
I mean, I know what you're talking about. So most other games, when you have multiple items to choose from, are going to give you like the option to pop up like the wheel or whatever to choose it.
Yeah, and yeah, the weapon wheel. I miss the weapon wheel a lot here.
Now, I can only guess as to the motivation as to why they would keep it the way it's been since Demon's Souls, where you have to, you know, like if you want to switch your consumable items, you press down on your directional pad until you get to it. But I think that there actually is an intentional design behind that, which is they want you to do that when you have an opening in combat, instead of just being able to really quickly be like, all right, here's my daggers, right? Like if you're fighting against, you know, a gigantic dragon, you're not going to instantly grab your daggers, right? You're going to need to fumble through your items a little bit and get whatever equipment that you're looking to grab. So I think from like the perspective of, you know, they want you to think about when you're switching your equipment over, you know, between your, because you can equip as many things as you want in that bar. You can equip one thing not have to scroll through anything. You can equip two, because, like, you know, I know I'm only going to use these two things for this situation, or for whatever reason you can put all 10 items on there and have to scroll through them all the time, right? You're not forced to have all that stuff to scroll through. Same thing with spells. You know, if you know you're only going to spam two spells for the entire game, you can just put two spells in, even if you have spots for 10. If you're not going to use them, why put them on there? I think that I personally like it, because I know that if I want to go and switch over to the flask that gives me more FP or mana, that I need to make sure the boss is not about to go and smash me in the face, and then I get some distance between me to buy some time to do that. So, I mean, yeah. I definitely understand the pain point of, you know, I can go play Assassin's Creed and pull up the weapon wheel. Another thing that you got to think about in this game is if you have a weapon wheel that goes and takes up the entire middle of your screen and the boss is doing something, you're about to get massively fucked up.
Yeah, especially because this game does not go by the philosophy of most games that have a weapon wheel, time slows down.
Yeah, that's never going to happen.
Yeah, exactly. There's no way a software game would ever give you a slowdown mechanic, because you know people would just abuse it, which is like, oh, something's about to happen. Let me pull up my weapon. I mean, I do it in Horizon. When things start to get real, I'm like, I don't know what's about to happen, so I'm just going to bring up my weapon wheel to slow down time. I remember Ghost of Tsushima, that was a small hack you could do in the combat, was to switch stance after you kill someone, because it slows down time. It's almost like a weapon wheel thing for abilities. And yeah, there's no way that's going to happen in there. I mean, a small example of something that was really annoying to me. I was fighting this. It didn't cause me to die, but it almost did. I was fighting a dragon, right? And my horse died. I didn't even notice this. Like, I got hit by the dragon somehow, and my horse dies. And I'm like, why am I not on my horse right now? I thought I just got staggered off my horse, because, you know, that happens sometimes. So I try to resummon my horse. And if your horse dies, Brigham, you have to use one of your health pots to revive the horse to start riding it again. Okay, perfectly fine so far. I'm trying to get back on my horse. There's a freaking dragon about to kill me. I'm like, can I get on my horse? And it just brings up the little dialogue box. It's like, do you want to use a potion bar to revive your horse? Like, what do you think I want to? Like, of course. Why does that come up? Like, that is so annoying. I almost died because I had to sit there and go to from no to yes to use a health potion to revive my horse. Of course I want to. If I didn't want to, I wouldn't put in that input. It's just like these little things that happen in the game so many times where it's just like, another example is I got locked in the dialogue box for a door that I couldn't open. Like, I tried to open the door. It said the door could not be open. Totally fine. No problem. I walk away from the door. The dialogue box stays. And I don't know if this is a bug or if it's designed like this. I literally could not do anything until I acknowledged that box. I couldn't attack. I couldn't roll. I couldn't do anything. So enemies start coming at me, and I'm like, I can't do it. Why can I not do anything? And I realize it's because the dialogue box is still there, and I have to press Y, and the prompt wasn't even there for me to press Y. It's just like these weird little things that just any other game wouldn't have you deal with. It just makes you feel, when you're like 5 hours in or 10 hours in and you've died a bunch of times, those little things start adding up in your head and you start hating the game over, like, and then that's when you quit for a week, because it's like, I'm so sick of dying because of this weird quality of life problems, I guess.
Yeah, those things that definitely happen. One thing I have noticed is that with the dialogue box thing, I don't know why. I think it's because they switched the interact button from A to Y in this game. No pun intended there. But some of the dialogue boxes, notification boxes, I guess is really what they are. But you close by pressing Y again, and others you close by pressing A, strangely enough. So I don't know if at some point in the development they switched the interact button, probably when they added jump, I would assume. But you're right, that stuff does hang on the screen, and I've definitely had it happen where it's like, oh shit, that thing's, you know, the correct contraption does not move, it's still on my screen, so I can't attack or jump or dodge roll or do anything.
Yeah.
The horse thing, I've seen a lot of people complaining about that on like Reddit. I mean, I personally hate the horse and think it just gimps me whenever I use it. So
I love
the horse. The horse kicks me off, I just leave it dead. I hate Torrent. It sucks. But yeah, I mean, that's something where I don't think that they need a confirmation, but I could see how, like, if you were actually voluntarily choosing to fight a boss on a horse for some unknown godforsaken reason, and you have one heal left, and you didn't know that you need to use a healing potion to revive the horse, that would be important. But I feel like that's something that, like, they could have happen, you know, three times, and then it doesn't really ask you anymore, because you should know at that point.
Yeah,
that's what happens. So, I mean, I definitely get that. I personally, I don't run across it because I'm sick of getting my ass knocked off my horse and then getting the shit beaten out of me by everything around me because I got hit by two enemies in a row.
Okay. Before we move on to the last thing, I gotta bring this up. You gotta admit that the dodge rolling animation is slower in this game than any other game that's ever existed.
I don't think so, because Dark
Souls it is proven. It is people have, there's endless videos online about with people putting in the input on their controllers and their PCs, and then the delay between it happening. There is a delay. There's just. But I don't know how else to say. I feel
like this is a non-issue though, Herb, because like if you,
I'm just saying,
anytime that you pick up a new game, they're all gonna have different dodge roll mechanics.
Right? I understand that,
and they're all gonna have different dodge roll timings. So like, perfect example, because I talked about it earlier, when I played through God of War, because I saw it had more Dark Souls-like combat in it, unlike the other, you know, previous God of War games that I played, I was like, oh, okay, so when I dodge roll, I'm going to, you know, dodge roll. But no, when you press the dodge button, you just kind of lurch to the side a little bit unless
little,
you hold it.
Little sidestep. yeah.
And if you try to sidestep a lot of shit, you're just going to get smacked in the face by it because you don't have invulnerability frames like you do in Dark Souls. So I think that's a weak argument. Yeah, it's different than other games and it's different than other Souls games, but like you should be able to account for that within like an hour of playing the game.
It took me like five.
So to contrast that, now this is actually bad design and something that was heavily criticized in the past is Dark Souls 2. So because in Dark Souls 1, they felt like it was too easy for your character to be good at too many things at the same time, which was absolutely true. You could be like a veritable god or a giant dad in Dark Souls 1. In Dark Souls 2, they added in a stat called adaptability. Now, the first time that I played through Dark Souls 2, I had no idea what adaptability did. It had a very vague description. And so I went through the entire game with the most useless dodge rolls on the face of the earth, because the adaptability stat they added in determined how quickly you roll and how many dodge frames you have when you roll. It also dictated how quickly you drank your healing flask. People were pissed about that. That was frankly terrible design, because you basically were obligated to take like 20 of your points and put it into that stat if you didn't want to be basically terrible at rolling.
Yeah.
That's also the first game where they split the stat for your ability to equip heavier armor and your stamina stat. So if you wanted to have heavier armor in that game, you had to specifically put points into that stat. And then if you wanted to have more stamina, you had to put it into an entirely different stat. So in this game, they're both tied together, right? And that's how it was in Dark Souls 1. Dark Souls 3 kept the Dark Souls 2 system of two different stats for it. It's ultimately, I think that the dodge rolling is fine. Because it's, again, it's no different than if you picked up Dark Souls 1, you'd say the exact same thing and be like, why is my dodging so weird? That's because it's just how it is in the game. It's
just gotta get used to it, unfortunately.
Unlike Dark Souls 2, where they just kind of rip the carpet out from underneath you and be like, hey, your dodge roll sucks ass now. Dodging sucked in Sekiro too.
All right, we've been going for pretty long here. Last question. Brim, do you have any lasting thoughts?
No, I think I'll let you have the last question.
Last question is, will this win Game of the Year?
I mean, it's pretty early in the year, but I haven't really seen any other games that are that compelling coming out.
I think,
other than like God of War, but
yeah,
I think the issue that they're going to run into with that is that it's because it worked really well the first time around, it looks like it's going to be more of the same, which isn't a bad thing, but when you're faced with like, you know, the biggest development in a beloved franchise's history, the game won most hyped game for 2 years in a row at the Game Awards, for God's sake. If it doesn't win game of the year, I mean, that's it's not gonna happen.
There's one thing I'd say about God of War potentially winning over it. The fact that God of War is so much more accessible and it's much more of a traditional game in terms of just like, if God of War ends up having an amazing story, an even better story than the first one, I'd say I'd give it a decent shot. But yeah, like you said, since it's so similar, if this was like the first God of War coming out, like the most recent one.
Exactly. Like I bought a PlayStation 4 specifically to play that game. Granted, I hadn't played Bloodborne and Demon's Souls, so I mean, you know, those were some other contributing factors because I wouldn't spend $400 on a console just from one game. But that game specifically, because I loved the God of War games before that, and I love Souls games, so when they combined the two together, I was like, hell yeah, man. You're absolutely right. Like, Elden Ring right now is like when the new God of War game was released. And I can't remember. Yeah. I'm pretty sure it won Game of the Year when that released.
Yeah, 100%.
So in the exact same way that if God of War in that year did not win it, it would have been snubbed. I would say the exact same thing about Elden Ring this year.
I have a strong feeling Elden Ring will win. God, like this new God of War coming out would have to be amazing for it to win over it. I don't think it will. There's an argument to be made that it can if it ends up being amazing. But yeah, if this was the first God of War to come out in the last 10 years, then yeah, I'd be like, okay, God of War's probably going to win, even though we haven't even seen it. But yeah, this is probably Game of the Year. We still got
Starfield. You never know.
I don't know, man. I mean, I'm looking forward to that, but at the end of the day, it is a Bethesda game, and we all know how those go on launch.
Yeah, it's like I feel like this is a make or break game for Bethesda. It's like, is Bethesda gonna are they gonna show that they've evolved, lately, or is it gonna be more of the same?
They really gotta step it up because they've really been dropping the ball in a lot of their recent games. So yeah, I hope Starfield is, because I'd like to see Elder Scrolls 6 come out at some point in my lifetime, but. I don't know, man. I'm looking forward to it, but I don't think it's going to be Game of the Year, to be honest, just because it's a Bethesda game.
Yeah. All right, Brigham, I think we'll pass our bedtime. Yeah. I mean, I think this is well-deserving. This is probably one of the biggest game releases in the last couple of years. And like we said, probably the biggest game release of the year. So it makes sense that we talk about it for an hour. And I don't know if I'll ever play another From Software game after this. We'll see. I don't even know when I'll beat this one because it's a bit of a grind. But yeah, it's a great game. If you like From Software games, I'm sure you're already playing it. And I would say this is probably the one to pick up first in terms of if you've never played them before. At least from my experience, it feels like, yeah, if there was anyone for me to start playing them with, this is probably the one. But yeah, that's all I got. Brigham, I'm pretty sure that's all you got too, yeah?
That's all I got, yeah. Thanks for coming on and enlightening us with your soul's wisdom.
Yeah, it's my pleasure. I have to give my rating though, because I feel like I have given it enough time that I'm warranted to be able to do so.
All right, hit us with it.
All right, so I'm going to give the game a 9 out of 10. And I will revise it to a 10 out of 10 if they fix the PC port. Because the random, I shouldn't even say it's random, because it's always happens, and it's three times in a row within like 4 or 5 seconds of each other, my game will randomly hang and stutter and lose frames. I don't know what's causing it. I don't know if it's the anti-cheat. I don't know if it's the fact that From Software is always super spotty on their PC ports in general. They did really well with Dark Souls 3, and they did really well with Sekiro. So I don't know what happened with this one, but it's honestly pretty inexcusable as far as like the random crashes that I'll get. And I mean, I literally built a $3,000 computer two and a half months before this. I mean, I've got a 3080 Ti and a very powerful processor in my computer and more than enough RAM. Like there should not be really any excuse for it to perform that poorly. I don't know what it's like on the consoles because I don't own any right now, but that would be my one reason for not giving it a perfect score. It's right now a pretty lackluster port.
Yeah. All right. Well, if you enjoyed the show, give us a follow on your podcast listening app of choice and on Twitter at BasementGaming9 to keep up with new episodes. Thank you again to Dylan for coming on. Thank you guys for listening, and see y'all next time.
Peace.